can light that star in San Marcos. It's a Bobcat winner and a repeat Sun Belt Conference championship for the Bobcats.
Right down the middle, struck him out. As the Bobcats have knocked off the top-ranked team of the country in their house. Another episode of the States Up podcast as we talk Texas State athletics. I'm your host, Brant Freeman. Another big show on top of the podcast this week. In fact, for the first time, we have two student-athlete interviews. We're talking Texas State quarterbacks with Ty Evans and Lane Hatcher, the two up for the starting job coming up in 2022. Both transfers into the program. For Ty Evans, this is year two for him, transferring in from NC State. And for Hatcher, year one for him, coming in from Arkansas State. And we'll talk with both coming up here in the podcast, both with really good stories to tell. And we also have several athletic programs to get into. And I'll tell you what, let's kind of start there as we get you warmed up for those two student-athlete interviews. And let's start with Texas State baseball. Ranked 17th in the latest D1Baseball.com poll, and they moved up two spots from the poll the week prior after an unbeaten week last week, going 4-0, wins over Baylor and the sweep over UTA. This week, Bobcats out to a good start. They won their midweek game on Tuesday in a marathon against UTSA, a nine-inning game that took 4 hours and 17 minutes. And the Bobcats won 14-12, and never a bad thing to beat UTSA, that's for sure. But that game just took forever. Nearly 400 pitches were thrown. There were 18 pitchers used, 33 hits combined, and the 26 runs scored. And it got dicey there towards the end of the game. Bobcats held what appeared to be a comfortable 9-run lead going into the ninth, 14-5, and UTSA had to go and score 7 runs and make it 14-12, and the bases were loaded with 2 outs in the ninth inning, so the tying run was at second when Tristan Stivers, the closer, came in and finally ended the game with a strikeout to mercifully put that game to an end. So one of the longer games the Bobcats will play this year, but hey, it's a win. So, and again, it's over UTSA, so you will always take that. And now they have won 6 in a row and are 20 games over 500, 29-9. Pretty remarkable when you consider that the team a year ago finished 15 games under 500, 21-36. So this remarkable turnaround season continues, and it will into this weekend, as the Bobcats host Little Rock. It'll be the final Sun Belt series ever between those two. As we all know, the Trojans are leaving for the Ohio Valley Conference, and they'll be joining the OVC in July. And it is one of 5 conference series left for this team. Home for 2 straight weeks. Little Rock this week, South Alabama next week. And then the following series is on the road in Monroe against ULM, back home the week after against Louisiana, and then they will end the regular season with 3 games in Atlanta against Georgia State. And as you look at the Sun Belt standings, the Bobcats 12-3. They have a 1-game lead over Georgia Southern, who of course has a tiebreaker against Texas State, and a 2-game lead over Georgia State. So it's possible that final series against the Panthers could decide this year's Sun Belt champion. Going to be a really good race to the end, and you know, even the 4th, 5th, and 6th place teams aren't too far behind. So very important for the Bobcats to take care of business this weekend against Little Rock. We'll have the entire series on ESPN+, Friday at 6, Saturday at 2:30, Sunday at 1. And do note, by the way, for all you dog lovers out there, Saturday's game is Bark of the Park Day. So bring your dog over to the ballpark, and I guarantee you, if you do, there's a really good chance we're going to find a way to get your dog on TV, because we're not going to be able to avoid doing that. That's for sure. Always makes for good television. So that's baseball. Softball is on the road for a conference series at Georgia Southern, and they too are heating up right now. Ricky Wooders' team has won 6 in a row, and they are now 26-17, so 9 games over 500, and coming off a pair of midweek wins, Tuesday over UTSA, Wednesday over UIW, both dominant run rule wins. 8-0 over the Roadrunners, 12-0 over UIW, and all 12 of the runs scored in that game came in the fourth inning alone. So offensively, very locked in right now. And by the way, we have had some really long half innings on TV this week. We had the UTSA game on, the baseball game Tuesday, which again, as we described, was a marathon, and then the UIW game Wednesday on ESPN+. So we've seen a 7-run inning for baseball for both the Bobcats and one for the Roadrunners, so a pair of 7-run innings that game, and then a 12-run fourth inning for the softball team on Wednesday. So made for some long TV, I can tell you that. And while the offense has really picked things up, what's even more notable is how they're pitching right now. Your Jessica Mullins is having another strong year, and now as a sophomore, she did a year ago as a freshman. And others are picking things up too, namely Carson Pierce. She's pitched back-to-back 5-inning shutouts, so she's been in the circle for a couple of run rule victories. And so between Pierce and Mullins, 27 straight scoreless innings turned in by those two heading into the series this weekend against the Eagles of Statesboro. So offense locked in, pitching getting even better, and this is all happening at the right time of year. As the regular season winds down, the Bobcats are currently just one game back of third in the conference, one game back of Troy, who they will host next week in St. Marcus, and only a game and a half back of South Alabama for second. So Bobcats right there in the thick of things in the conference and in the standings there in softball as well. So that'll look at baseball and softball. I do want to get into some of the other Olympic sports coming up here in the podcast, but we're going to hit the pause button on that right now because I really want to get into these interviews we have with Ty Evans and Lane Hatcher. Again, the top two quarterbacks for this program coming into 2022, both really good stories, really good backgrounds. You know, Evans, again, a transfer in from NC State, highly recruited quarterback coming out of high school in Colorado, where he was the Gatorade Player of the Year. First committed to Arkansas when Brett Bielema was there, but when Bielema was let go, he then decommitted and then committed to Colorado. Wanted to stay close to home, so to speak, but they too had a coaching change shortly after he committed to the Buffaloes. So decommitted from there, and then committed to NC State, played for the Wolfpack for a couple of seasons, and then came over to Texas State, and he's getting ready for year two now. So that's a little bit about Ty Evans, who we're going to hear from first, and then we're going to get into a conversation with Lane Hatcher, the first-year transfer out of Arkansas State. For him, this will be his third stop, actually. You know, Lane Hatcher, again, was with the Red Wolves for 3 years, and before that, spent a season in Tuscaloosa with Alabama. So, very interesting stories for the two of them, and let's get to it right now. And we're going to start with a guy who simply got here first, Ty Evans. Again, this is year two for him, for Lane Hatcher, year one. So, let's start with Ty Evans and get to know more about Ty and his story and what he's looking forward to in 2022. So next up in our podcast series is Bobcat quarterback Ty Evans, hailing from Colorado, getting ready for his second year at Texas State, transferred in from North Carolina State going into the 2021 season. And you know, Ty, you've been now here on campus for a little more than a year now. So what have your impressions been? You're growing up from Colorado, relocating over to North Carolina, now here in Texas. What do you like so far?
I mean, Texas State has been like everything that I hoped for. Coming from NC State, I didn't really know what to expect. But I get here, I've met great people. San Marcos is like a phenomenal area. Mm-hmm. And the school itself I love. And, you know, football is always football. College football is kind of the same everywhere you go. You're going to have the same struggles and everything. But the staff has been great to me. Mm-hmm. And the guys on the team have welcomed me in full arms. So I can't really, like, ask for much more. You know, I just love it here.
I can't help but notice that the quarterback room is now vastly different this time than it was when you first came in last year. You know, Tyler Vitt ended his career at the end of this past season. Brady McBride has elected to go into the transfer portal and leave Texas State. So you're one of the few returners back in that quarterback room. How different is the dynamic now?
It's funny you say that. I was actually joking with Tanner that he's kind of the vet around in the QB room now. But it's cool. This is the first year in college football that I've played under the same QB coach and the same offense. And I think that it's really, you know, it shows out there that I'm getting a lot more comfortable in the offense, with the guys in the room. Dylan's great. Lane is awesome. You know, it's been cool getting to know them and competing with them and, you know, pushing each other to be better every day. Mm-hmm.
The last 2 years in the world have been so difficult. It does feel like we're finally at the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the pandemic and COVID. 2020 at NC State, really, really weren't able to play. It was such a bizarre year. And then your first year at Texas State, I know that COVID actually impacted you, not only, you know, and having caught it, but also, too, just never really quite the same afterwards. If you could share with us what that experience was like for you.
It was not a good time at all. Once I got COVID, it was a Sunday night when I kind of realized I didn't taste anything. Mm-hmm. And then I started like 30 minutes in my room. I'm calling my mom. I'm like trying hot sauce and toothpaste, just trying to taste anything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started panicking. So I got tested the next day. It popped positive. Hung out in my room for 14 days and had to watch, you know, the Incarnate Game Word from home, mm-hmm. which was not a good time. But, you know, I think after that, it was kind of hard to get back in the groove of things. Because, you know, I'm not getting a ton of reps to get back in the groove and knock the rust off. It's hard to get back in the swing. Mm-hmm. So I do think it, like, affected the rest of my season and, you know, how I was practicing. But coming back from that this spring, you know, I felt great out there. I feel like I'm in my zone and I feel like I've been playing well.
So I mentioned your time at NC State there for two seasons, but you actually first committed to Arkansas. You were a highly sought after quarterback coming out of high school, Colorado. You had a tremendous prep career there, the 2017 Gatorade Player of the Year in the state. And we'll talk more about high school football in Colorado in a moment. But it kind of take me through your collegiate journey a little bit, you know, with all the recruiting that was going on when you're in high school, the decision to decommit from Arkansas to go to NC State. What has all this been like for you?
It has not been how I expected it to be, that's for sure. When I committed to Arkansas, I was set on going there, and then Coach B left the program. I actually committed to Colorado mm-hmm. about 3 or 4 months later, and then Coach Mack gets, you know, fired there. So I had about 2 weeks to figure out before I had my signing day, because I was pretty set on being an early enrollee. Mm-hmm. I took a official to NC State, and, you know, I really liked the program out there and, you know, their work ethic and how they coached guys, and I decided to, you know, go there. I really appreciate my time at NC State. I think it taught me a lot as a person. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I had a really good high school career, and, you know, to be honest, I didn't have much adversity during my high school career. Kind of just I walked out there and I was the best on the field, and that's kind of how I played. Yeah. And then I get to college and you kind of get smacked in the face and, hey, you're not the best on the field. You're the last man on the totem pole. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot to grow up. I was across the nation, a long way from family, and I had to grow up really fast. And, you know, I had to really find who I was, yeah. really find that toughness inside of me. And I think that, it's weird to talk about. Because I've never really been asked about it in a formal setting, but right. I think since my high school career was so easy, it really had to teach me what was I willing to put on the line for football. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been extremely easy to walk away at any point, but, you know, I decided to get back up, you know, lace my shoes up every morning, go to work because there's really nothing else you can do. Mm-hmm. And it's got me this far. And, you know, I think that's something that a life lesson I'll have for the rest of my life.
It's a great perspective, Ty. You know, obviously everybody who plays in college was a star in high school, and it's a huge adjustment for everyone to go from being the big dog on campus to, like, everybody's a big dog here now. How do I elevate my game even further? So great perspective on your part from there. And you mentioned, you know, all the success you enjoyed in Colorado. Some of the guys I've talked with on this podcast, most of them have played high school football in Texas, and they always brag about it for good reason. It's as good in this state as it is anywhere in the country. What is the scene like, high school football in Colorado?
It's funny because it was the same in North Carolina. A bunch of guys on the team played in North Carolina, and everyone here played in Texas, and everyone, you know, walks around talking about Texas high school football, which, I mean, all due respect, I never played a team from Texas, but, you know, Colorado isn't, we're not a bunch of pushovers either. Mm-hmm. You know, we play good football up there. We got a lot of good players that I think kind of get overlooked just because we're not really known for being a football state. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the football community in Colorado, it's pretty close-knit. Once you get into, like, the guys that are good, we're all pretty much training together every weekend. You know, all the quarterbacks that went D1, I pretty much saw every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of pushes you to be better. You see the competition every week, and you see them on Friday nights too.
Yeah.
So they get to know you a lot. You get to know them, and it makes competing against them a lot more fun. It's a lot of smack talk before and after games. So It was a lot of fun, and, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I wouldn't have rather played anywhere else.
Looking at your family background a little bit, your dad was a Division I athlete as well, played baseball in New Mexico. Your sister, speaking of the Carolinas, played volleyball for the Tar Heels at North Carolina. What is it like, that dynamic with the family and multiple members of it having athletic backgrounds?
My other older sister, she doesn't get a lot of shout-outs, but she also played Division II volleyball at UCCS, so I got to slip that in there so she's not mad at me. But, you know, growing up in that kind of family, sports is kind of what we did. Every weekend we were driving to a volleyball tournament, and then my dad is taking me from a volleyball tournament to a basketball game in another part of Colorado, and, you know, the next day we're doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Every Sunday I was waking up at 6:30 and driving to a gym somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to spend a lot of good quality time together, and that's kind of how we bonded as a family. And, you know, I got to look up to my sisters who had a lot of success, and, you know, I got to see what they were doing and what worked for them and what didn't work for them. And, you know, they were my role models in a lot of ways. You know, they know exactly how it was growing in my family. They know exactly how it was being in our community. So I looked towards them for a lot of advice. You know, it was a lot of who we are. It is till this day. It's just kind of, we're an athletic family, and that's what we do.
You mentioned how athletics help the family bond together, but I do recall, too, one of the press conferences you attended last year, you're wearing a T-shirt, a Rocky T-shirt. I think it was from Rocky IV, by the way. Mm-hmm. And you were asked about it, and you mentioned that your dad was a huge Rocky fan, and the two of you would go back and watch all the movies and kind of bond together. What were those experiences like, going back and watching those movies back from the 80s and 90s?
I mean, my dad had me watching Rocky when I was 3, and, you know, he would get me up and he'd start hitting my hands and everything. It was a lot of fun. And back then it was just a movie about, you know, some ugly dude hitting another guy. Uh-huh. And then as I grow older, I start seeing myself in the situations that he is. And, you know, even in the Creed movies, I relate a lot to the Creed movies just because they're in our generation and they focus a lot more on the character itself. Mm-hmm. So, like, Creed 2, for example, he's the guy, he's the heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. And then he gets beaten this preliminary round by nobody. Mm-hmm. And then he has to go find himself again. I kind of see myself in college football a lot that way. You know, I was Gator Player of the Year, whatever, championships. Mm-hmm. And then I go to NC State, I got knocked on my butt. And it kind of, you had to look the guy in the mirror and you say, who are you? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to work? And We actually, my dad, every like game day, even when I was playing YMCA basketball, we'd listen to the Rocky soundtrack in the car. And those are like some of my favorite memories. And, you know, I look up in the crowd and he, you know, point to the heart and I knew exactly what that meant. You know, you got to have that fight inside you. You got to have that Rocky mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not always going to be the best. You're not always going to be the biggest. But it's, you know, what's inside that counts more.
You probably have Eye of the Tiger completely memorized, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think most of the songs in that soundtrack I could pretty much recite.
So one other thing I'd like to get into here and kind of take our listeners behind the curtain, you and I actually had a chance to meet up in a different setting a couple of months ago. You're a mass communications major with an emphasis in electronic media, which is broadcast journalism, same degree I received here at Texas State, and you were part of a tour group that was looking at the ESPN Plus production studio that we have here on campus. Is this something you'd like to pursue?
Absolutely. It's something that I didn't really recognize until I was in college. Going into high school, I kind of just decided on business because that was kind of the broadest and it would give me a lot of aspects. But when I got to college, I was like, all right, I could be on TV. I can't waste, you know, this face behind a camera.
That's what I say too.
You know, I mean, if you're this good looking, you might as well be in front of a camera.
Well, hey, Ty, great stuff, man. Looking forward to a great 2022. Great catching up with you, and we hope to talk to you again sometime down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you, and go Cats.
So that again, Ty Evans, great perspective from him. And again, the big part of his story from this past year was when he caught COVID in the third week of the regular season, had to be away from the team for almost 2 weeks. And even when he returned to football activities, this really wasn't quite himself, something that he has admitted to and the coaching staff has alluded to. But he's back to being the Ty Evans they brought in. And looked very good in the spring and is very much in the conversation for the starting job. Had a hard time getting into that conversation this past year, but is right there right now, neck and neck with Lane Hatcher. And that's saying a lot because Lane, who we're about to visit with next, of course, had a remarkable career at Arkansas State. Sun Belt Freshman of the Year back in 2019. Led the Red Wolves to a bowl game then and won it. Good numbers again in 2020. In fact, many Bobcat fans will remember the shootout of sorts that he and Brady McBride had at Bobcat Stadium towards the end of that very strange 2020 year, but has decided to make the next change in his career and decided to transfer out and into Texas State. And so looking forward to how things work out for him now as a Bobcat. Did mention earlier that this is his third stop, began his career at Alabama. So he was in a quarterback room. Think about this. When he was in Tuscaloosa with Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and Mac Jones. Mac Jones, of course, now with the Patriots, Hurts with the Eagles, Tagovailoa with the Dolphins. All had incredible careers at Alabama. All were high draft picks in the NFL. Pretty cool perspective from Lane in that regard. We'll talk with him more about that, about his time at Arkansas State, and more, of course, about his decision to come to Texas State. So let's talk more with Lane now and get him out of the podcast here on States Up.
We're now joined in the podcast here on States Up by Lane Hatcher, a first-year transfer at the quarterback position, transferring in from Arkansas State. Three seasons with the Red Wolves, now a Bobcat. Does have 2 years of eligibility left here at Texas State to include this year and next. And I guess, Lane, we'll kind of start there a little bit as fans get to know you. You're one of the newest players on the team. And what have you enjoyed so far about your time in St. Marcus?
I think first off, the weather's awesome. It's pretty much warm all the time. But just this team and how close they are, and it's an older group of guys, and me being an older guy, that's something really nice. That you got a lot of guys that have been and played football and been in college and done all of that before, and the coaching staff, you know, they're a great group of guys. Coach Spavitt, he's who I'm with every day, and me and him have a great relationship, and that's just been an awesome experience for me.
Your 3 years at Arkansas State went very well. You were the 2019 Sun Belt Conference Freshman of the Year. You took that Red Wolf team to a bowl. It's never easy to leave a good situation like you had at Arkansas State. You made a tough decision to enter the transfer portal. If you can, give us just a little bit of insight as to why the decision to make a change.
Right. So I was there with Blake Anderson and his staff originally, and we had a great year that year. Went to a bowl game and won a bowl game. And next year was a COVID year and had a lot of difficulties and you know, some stuff outside of football with Coach Anderson and his family, just some really tough situations. But, you know, loved that place and loved being in my home state, Arkansas. And then obviously Coach Anderson and his staff leave and just had a new staff and, you know, probably just going some different directions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. That's the way college is today. And that's a great part of the transfer portal is then you get to find a place like Texas State and a guy like Coach Babadol, who is one of my biggest mentors and somebody I really look up to and trust. And so that was an awesome experience for me to get here and be here and feel so welcome and loved.
You mentioned Blake Anderson, by the way. I have so much respect for him, and it's been so difficult what he's gone through, the loss of his wife and then the loss of his son recently as well. I know that you were very close to Blake Anderson. From your perspective, how has he dealt with all this? Is he doing okay now?
Yeah, I still talk to him. You know, I talked to him when I was entering the transfer portal. He was just giving me advice on, you know, where to go and what to look for, and if I ever had questions about a coach that contacted me while I was in there, he was a guy I could talk to. And, you know, I think that's really special having people that you can talk to like that are in this game. And so he's always been great to me. So obviously everybody has stuff to say about college football these days, but I think with what he's been through and how he's handled it, there's a lot of respect for that and how he's even cared for me after he wasn't my coach anymore, or something special.
Yeah, certainly so. And also, too, when you look at your career, I don't know if everybody realizes you didn't start at Arkansas State. You actually started your career at Alabama. So I have to ask, you're around, you know, one of the best college football programs in the country, perhaps ever, in Alabama, and playing under the great Nick Saban. What was that environment like in Tuscaloosa?
I think it was great for me as a young kid in my first year of college to see how I needed to handle my life and see these quarterbacks who are on the biggest stages with millions of people look at them and criticizing everything they do about how to live your life as a quarterback. You know, I've always been told and told people that being a quarterback isn't a position you play, it's a lifestyle you live. And that comes with what you do outside of the facility, how you go out and how you treat people at dinner, how you live your life in general. It's a leadership role in the facility, it's a leadership role outside the facility, and I think it's a lifetime title that you have. It's not something that you are just while you're playing.
How much did you interact with Nick Saban?
You know, he was my coach, he just like any other player would. And I think I learned a lot from him and just the intensity and the preparation and how you have to prepare when it's the biggest game of the week every week at that school. That's a pretty special thing to be a part of. And then that quarterback room, you know, I remember my first start at Arkansas State. I threw for 400 yards that week, and I was the number one passer that week, and number two was Tua at Alabama. He had 400 yards, and number three was Jalen at Oklahoma. And then there was a kid named Mac Jones who was the backup at Alabama. And it was funny, you know, when you look back at it, we got four guys in that room there my freshman year. And we all thought we were the best players in the world, and shoot, three of them have pretty much proven it, and I want to be the next guy in that order. And I think that was something really cool to see, is when you're in a room where you're competing with guys like that every day. You know, my goal wasn't to be just a quarterback there. I wanted to beat Tua and Jalen and Mac every day, and I think that really set the bar for how I prepared. And Jalen and Tua both taught me a lot about how to watch film and how to throw extra and what you want to do in the offseason and stuff like that. So at 18, 19 years old, that's something really special that you get to be a part of. I think it made me grow up fast, which really paid off in the long run.
So, again, you've enjoyed a lot of success your first 4 years of college football, from being at a program like Alabama to Arkansas State, freshman of the year, all those numbers. I believe you're top 10 in all-time total yards in Arkansas State history. And you've done all this as a non-scholarship player. And, you know, here at Texas State, you're battling for the starting quarterback job. You're certainly a scholarship caliber player, but not on scholarship here either. Give us a little bit more insight into that dynamic for you.
You know, I'm lucky to come from a situation where I was going to go to college, whether it was football or not. And originally when I went to Arkansas State, I was going to be on scholarship and just kind of decided and went to Coach Anderson and just said, you know, give it to somebody else. Go bring another guy in, or go put a walk-on scholarship that's earned that. And so that we can build this team, you know, the goal is to have the best team possible. And if me sacrificing that, and luckily I come from a situation, I'm not trying to brag or do anything like that, but just having the ability to do that, I think if it can help the team, I'm willing to do it. And that's who I want to be, is somebody that helps the team no matter what it costs.
I think what you're alluding to there is that you have the luxury because you have great family financial support to be able to do that. But at the same time, is this kind of teaching you some hard work habits as well?
Yeah, and I think it's a mindset. You know, I've never been the prettiest guy, the tall guy with the rocket arm, and that I've always believed that I've had to work. And from high school, you know, I was always I called myself a frustrated recruit because, you know, I felt like I was doing everything necessary but wasn't necessarily getting all the scholarships that I wanted. And so I think I just carried that mindset, and it's that. You know, I was a wrestler too. It's that wrestler, I'll out grind you mindset, and that's what I wanted to be, was a grinder. I wanted to just be the hardest worker in the room so I could live in peace afterwards.
I want to get back to the transfer portal here for a second. It's been such a hot topic over the last 3 or 4 years. Really kind of started with football, but it's really ballooned in the other sports as well. What is life like for a student athlete in the transfer portal? You make the decision to go in, and then you wait. What is it like to be in the portal?
You know, it's interesting. I never had the goal of entering the portal, never wanted to enter the portal, never wanted that to be my outcome. I plan entirely on finishing at Arkansas State. But, you know, things work in different ways. I think it's a good thing. I think that, you know, they are starting to put some rules in place to control when. But I think also there has to be a timing. When you're on the team, you're on the team. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the season, you're a part of that team. And that's where I get frustrated sometimes when guys leave in the middle of the season or right before the season. I don't necessarily think that's right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think if after the season you have your meetings with your coaches and you understand that we probably need to go different ways, I think that's a fair thing to do. Just like coaches getting new jobs and leaving for other places, they do it at the end of the season or after the season. I think that's an okay thing to do. And so that's what I want to do. There was never a point in the season where I was like, I'm leaving this place. It was, you know, we have our end of the year meetings. I still wasn't leaving. And then, you know, you talk with the people you care about, your mentors, your players, your coaches, your teammates, your family. And then you come to a decision. And I tried to be as clear and upfront as possible and explain why I felt like I needed to leave. And I think they understood. And then I think if you do it at the right time and in the right situation, it's a pretty quick process. I was on the phone with a good amount of schools within the next day and came down to see Coach Babb pretty soon after that and never left.
So you mentioned your mentality is that of a grinder. You're continually trying to get better and doing everything you can to improve as a quarterback, as a student athlete. And I noticed that you attended the Manning Passing Academy going into 2021, going into that season. What was the experience like at the Manning Passing Academy?
I thought it was just I was really excited about it because, you know, I thought it was really cool that they consider me one of those top guys in the country that, you know, they want to bring in those best quarterbacks in college football. And you know, I was honored to be there, but I saw it as an opportunity I wanted to beat those guys. Sadly, there was a lot of rain and stuff that week, but and we didn't get to do some of the competitions, but I'm getting to go back this summer. So I'm really excited about that again. And, you know, the best thing about it was we got an hour to just sit down with Peyton Neal and we could ask him any question we wanted. And I had my notebook and I had about 100 different questions I needed to ask. But, you know, I think it's just a cool experience to be around the guys that you want to be like. I want to be around Peyton Manning and those guys as much as I can to try to figure out what they did and how they did it and do it myself.
You mentioned Peyton and Eli, and obviously the two had tremendous college and NFL careers and won Super Bowls and stuff like that. But the personalities are really shining through right now with what they're doing with Monday Night Football. You know, just their Manning cast, so to speak. So they seem to be very funny, humorous, you know, down-to-earth kind of guys. Are they like that in person?
100%. They're still brothers, they're still brothers who are picking on each other during practice and all that stuff, but the ability to flip a switch. And I think all great quarterbacks have that. You have to have the ability to be one of the guys in the locker room, and then when you go out there, flip the switch, and you got to be a leader. You got to hold guys accountable and stuff like that. So I think that's really an important role in pretty much every successful quarterback I've seen. You have to have the personality to make people – you have to be liked by the team, and that's something I want to emulate and try to do myself.
So the world knows the Manning family between Peyton, Eli, and Dad Archie, of course. We don't know a whole lot about yours. You know, you're from Little Rock, Arkansas. We mentioned your family's been very well-to-do. But if you could, give us a little insight about your upbringing and your family and how much they're supporting you.
Yeah, I got four sisters who are all college athletes. I have two play basketball in college and two play soccer in college, and my dad was a college athlete. And so – three older sisters who really set the bar high. My oldest sister was a really big time basketball player, number one shooting guard in the country coming out of high school, and then other two sisters were big time athletes as well, and all had successful careers in college. And then my little sister plays basketball at Samford University, Division One school in Birmingham, and so I think. You know, that's just what we did. That's how we were raised. And my whole life I wrestled and played baseball and played football. And to be honest with you, I always thought I was going to be a wrestler growing up. Just that's what I did, and I felt like that's what I excelled at. And my heart was always in football. But I think that wrestling background really defines who I am, and I think that's what you see the most of me.
You're not the only former Arkansas State person now to become a Bobcat. There was big news released not long ago that Kelly Dampfis is coming from Jonesboro to St. Marcus to be the president. And I've heard nothing but glowing things about him, by the way. I had a chance to visit with Matt Stoles, I'm sure you know, Arkansas State's radio voice. And he was, he talked you up quite a bit. And two, Kelly Dampfis was very high on him as well. Did you get to know Kelly very well when you were in Jonesboro?
I think if you lived in Jonesboro, you got to know Kelly pretty well. He is one of the greatest human beings I've ever been around. And when I found out that he was coming here, I couldn't have been more excited. There's a lot of presidents who are just presidents. He's your friend, your mentor. He's going to be at every football game. He's going to be at every event, at everything that ever goes on at this school. He will be there, and his wife will be there, and his dog will probably be there most of the time. He is one of the nicest, most genuine people I've ever been around. And I think he has the ability to push the school to new phases that they might not have seen possible. I think there was a ton of growth at Arkansas State, especially in terms of if you just look at the football stadium and the football program and how it grew. He was there for that. He changed that whole city and the whole town, and he knew every single person on that campus. He knew their name. He knew their family. He'd come say hi to you. He's approachable, and I couldn't be more excited that he's coming.
Well, we're glad to have him in St. Marcus and you as well, Lane. Thank you so much for this today, and best of luck to you this upcoming 2022 season.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So that, again, our conversation with both Lane Hatcher and Ty Evans. Again, two really just good guys, good student athletes, great representatives of the university. Also very cool to get Lane's take on the incoming president of the university, Kelly Dampfis, and really cool story for both of those two, and looking forward to what they bring to the table at the game's most important position coming up here in the 2022 season. Before we close things out here on the podcast, do want to get into some other sports here at Texas State, and I want to start with golf. The women's golf team is coming off a fourth place finish at the Sunbelt Championships in Daytona Beach from earlier this week. Hunia Gabasa had the best showing of the Bobcats, led them with a seventh place finish, and was just one stroke back at making the all-tournament team. That kind of wraps up a great year for Parr Nilsson and his group, and the men will get their shot at the Sunbelt Championships in Arkansas coming up this weekend. So that'll look at golf. And on the topic of Sunbelt Championships, the women's tennis team is currently at the Sunbelt Championships in Georgia. And this is notable because Tori Plunkett, who is the head coach of the program, is coaching her final set of matches. Now, as head coach at Texas State, she's the longest tenured coach at this university. Only Ricky Woodard has been with her program longer. For Tori Plunkett, this is her 19th and final year. She has announced her retirement at the end of the season, and we actually have more on her story on the official athletics website, txst.com. Check it out in the Texas Statements series. Some good stuff about her time coming up on two decades as a Bobcat. One other note, track and field held its final home meets of the year last weekend of the Charles Austin Classic, and of course he himself was there. A legend at Texas State, talked about him in the podcast last week. Former Olympic gold medalist, U.S. record holder in the high jump, but now has a meet named after him, an annual one that started up this year. And he was there along with over 50 other Texas State track alums. So good to see the former athletes come out and support the current ones who are having a really incredible outdoor season, especially the women who set a school record in the 4x100-meter relay at the Charles Austin Classic this past weekend. The men, by the way, tied the school record. But getting back to the women, the athlete we keep bringing up when discussing track and field is Alyssa Wilson. She's just putting up some insane numbers in her first year as a Bobcat, again, transferring in from UCLA, where she competed with John Frazier there, and now John Frazier here. Had the second farthest shot put in school history this past weekend, and she is now the only thrower in the country to rank in the top 10 in three different throwing categories: shot put, discus, and hammer. And she is really leading the charge for a women's track and field unit, which now is ranked 33rd in the country. And based on the records that we have, that is the highest ranking ever for the women at Texas State. And considering how well they have performed over the years, that's really saying something about what they're doing right now in the spring year of 2022. So with that, that's going to wrap up this week's podcast. Do want to thank both Ty Evans and Layla Hatcher again for joining us. Two great student athletes. Looking forward to watching those two compete for the starting job here in 2022. And looking forward to more of our student athlete interviews in the weeks ahead. Have a few more football interviews to get through, and looking forward to telling their stories and others from athletes across the Texas State athletics landscape. So until next time, I'm Brant Freeman, reminding you to keep those stakes up.